Blog Talk Radio.
This particular song right here is dedicated to the black woman, and it doesn't pertain to all black women. Some of y'all disrespect yourself because you don't know who you are in the first place. This is out of common respect for all women, period. Well, like this song. Yo, I'm quite single and occasionally I mingle, but aside from all the rest, she sparks my interest. No ma'am, I don't know you, just offering the common respect, I feel I owe you. Also, some conversation, companionship, common ground and common sense. There's no such thing as coincidence in me finding you here, and I really hate screaming in your ear. So some other time, okay, I waited the day. Hello, this is Carlito from a couple of days ago. You sound tired, forgive me if I've called you too late, but what better time to relate my state? Look at that again, has anyone ever told you got beautiful skin? You're more than welcome, what do you desire with? I just wanna be, there's no need to put titles on you and me. Those are limitations, living and learning are our only obligations. Equality, honesty, independence, intelligence, emotion and devotion, humbly seeking to hear God when he's speaking. At one time my mind just couldn't conceive, a woman had to dress a certain way to believe. But in the same breath, allow me to say that if you believe, young lady, you wouldn't dress that way. And I was attracted to your class, I couldn't see all your ass, and I was very content, you deserved every compliment. Now, remember how indifferences make us the same. You gotta have a game, or you ain't even gonna be able to take care of yourself. And love, when I look at you, I see my reflection, so I offer my love, affection, and protection. Shout it, you did fine, but the bottom line is, you still my sister.
Welcome to Sister Awareness. Tonight's show is going to be about Detroit, all eyes on Detroit, municipal self-determination. The political crisis in Michigan has been embedded in Detroit since 1701, marked by apartheid, colonialism, enslavement, illegal population transfers, violations of land, property, and water rights, crimes against humanity. In addition to the extreme corruption, violence, poverty, and land and human rights violation, this constitutes a project of impunity by the United States government, and it's being challenged by the people of Detroit government. Join us tonight as we look at some of the human rights violations in Detroit, Michigan. I'm going to have a special guest, one of the co-founders of the People's Detroit government, and I'm going to bring our guest on the line. His name is Daniel Guthridge.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, Sister Elena. How's everyone this evening?
Everything is all well, my brother Daniel. It's good to hear from you. It's good to hear from you. How are things going in Detroit? This tonight's show is going to be an examination of what's going on in Detroit, and also a call for people that live in Detroit to join the Detroit People's Government. Also, we're going to be talking about the upcoming tribunal for Detroit, Michigan, and possibly some other areas in Detroit. And I'm going to yield the floor to you so you can give the audience a background on some of the things that you've been working on and how the Detroit People's Government was founded.
Thank you, Sister Elena. Welcome, everyone. My name is Daniel Guthridge. I am a human rights policy officer. We're operating under the rules and guidelines of the United Nations General Assembly. These are rules and laws that was put in place that the United States agreed to follow. They made their final agreement in 1992 when they said, yes, we will follow all rules of human rights and of self-determination. That's the basic principle of how we're able to do what we're doing. But the way we were what started this program, the movement, is basically seeing the destruction of the people in Detroit and around the country. So this humanitarian crisis is all over the world, actually, but as you know, we can only focus on our country, and primarily right now we're focusing on Detroit to have a single place to start, and then it will metastasize out from there. That's the plan. But we were started back in, I got involved in 2016 when I joined one of the movements when there was Comrade Ramzu Yunus, and a friend of his invited me up to Highland Park, Michigan. So while we were there, you know, we were doing a job fair and a signing, having people invoke their rights of self-determination to withdraw their consent, you know, and consent to a temporary council that would give them the homes and the reparations or grants, as we call it, which is actually what it is, you know, and that part of it went well. We, you know, basically was getting people signed up by the thousands. Well, as you know, there are certain entities that doesn't want this to happen. They want to keep us under their control. They want to keep the poverty, and they want to keep the police brutality, mass incarceration. They want to keep the system just the way it is. They like it the way it is. Remember, the system's not broken. It's working exactly the way it was designed. So once I was there, and we've seen and how the people were 100% supportive of it. This is what the people wanted. The people wanted. This is the will of the people. Well, needless to say, this local system government didn't want it that way, so they literally blatantly attacked us. Now, I'm not a racist. I'm a realist. You know, this is just what reality is. So I'm getting ready to say it the way I want to say it. The black police officers that was there, at least 40 or 50 of them, never made a move against us, because this was on July 4th, 2016. There was no city work being interrupted. We weren't interfering with anything that had to do with any type of city, you know, government business. But the mayor did not want this to take place, because he knew that he was on his way out and the people were going to have control over their city again. So he had to call in some, I don't know if he did it or who did it, whether it was the governor, the mayor, who, which I'm not going to cast blame. But I know about six or seven white SWAT officers showed up and just literally just rushed and attacked Comrade Ramsey and some of the other folks that was there at the table. I was out in the crowd talking with the crowd and talking with the police at the time, and we didn't even realize they had come up when it actually happened. But in any case, that's where I got started, you know, in that area. Wonderful. Right there, Detroit, Highland Park.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Brother Daniel, I have been, I had 2018 to witness the work that you all were doing. And I must say, I was very impressed by you and Brother Ramzu and the rest of the comrades who have put together the people's government in Detroit. I, too, got an opportunity to talk to some of those people who had been suffering the, you know, the homelessness and the exclusion there in Detroit. And, you know, it's one thing when you read about something in an article or on the news, but when you actually can see and you talk to those people who has been traumatized and who is undergoing those bouts of, you know, permanent poverty and homelessness, it's a whole nother matter. And just to see some of those women and speak to those women who had those children who are working poor, living out of their cars, it done something to me. And it really inspired me to keep pushing for self-determination and self-governance. I want to applaud you and Brother Ramsey for what you all are doing. You're laying the foundation of liberation and how it's going to look and how it's supposed to look. I've taken the opportunity to research every aspect of what you and Brother Ramsey has been doing and apply the international laws within the regional system, such as the Inter-American Court, within the human rights system. And I also looked at some criminal charges that states can be brought up on as well. You all are well within the parameters of international law. However, what has to be done, from what I see, is we have to build capacity and get more people in Detroit involved. That way, they'll know what their rights are as well, and they'll be able to move with you in your fight to secure, protect, and defend those land, property, and water rights in Detroit. Also, I want to bring up the fact that you raised the eyebrow on corruption at one point. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the, we don't want to go into a whole lot of detail, but so, some of the corruption that's been going on with the property up there in Detroit, and also the water as well. It appears that the water rights of the people of Detroit is being sidestepped as well. Am I correct, or can you elaborate on that?
Yes, ma'am, I sure can. Well, we'll start with the properties. We'll start with that. And I have firsthand information on this straight from the mouths of some of the folks that work in the land bank that I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. That's when I went to the Detroit Land Bank, City Land Bank office to get some information on this so-called injunction that they have against Comrade Ramsey and myself, and basically a blanket injunction that anyone and everyone involved that in this movement. In other words, anyone who's trying to insert their rights, their God-given rights, first of all, that's their human rights, not only. Also, the rights and laws as written by the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan, the Michigan State Constitution, and also the Detroit City Charter. Well, this is based on the corruption with the homes. While I was there at the land bank trying to retrieve this information on these properties and this injunction, there was a couple citizens came in trying to find out getting information that what do they have to do to stop them from coming and taking this home back that they bought? Because, you know, they're doing them property auctions for $1,000, but then they're putting a limitation on, or a time limit, I should say, on how soon you have to have it fully repaired or certain repairs that must be made by a certain point in time. And if you don't make them repairs, then they come and take the house back again. Now, this is what the young ladies was in there asking the clerks behind the desk. What do they have to do? So that's corruption in itself. If you bought it, you bought it to me. If you auctioned off, you bought that property, naturally, you're taking your time to fix a property up that is damaged. They have no right to put a time limit on what process you should be in at a certain time. That's corruption in itself. Also, people were applying for homes and paying money for these auctions. And then when it came time to go ahead and get the deed to do further inquiries about the house, they'll tell them, oh, that house was sold, and they don't get their money back also. So there's a lot of corruption going on up there. And with right to housing, you know, we have necessities of life is food, clothing, and shelter. And also it reads in the Detroit City Charter that the people have a right to expect the city to provide them with decent housing It says it right in the city charter. So as we're in, basically putting people in these homes, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. We're taking independent political control, the people, by the will of the people that say they want these homes. These are basically neglected, abandoned properties. We're going to say abandoned because the city's not doing anything with them. There's thousands of empty properties. That's residential and commercial. But we're only dealing with food, clothing, and shelter, so that means that's housing. Well, when we put people in these homes that we have a right to do, that the people have consented to, and none of this is illegal. All of this is lawful actions by the consent of the people. They'll come through in the night. They'll hire private security people or private cronies. This, I'm talking about the mayor, the city council, I'm talking about the Detroit Land Bank. We're talking about all of them. They're going out and putting these people back out of them homes, putting them out in the night, in the rain, with children, don't care, and that. And also, the city is towing their vehicles also to put a heavier burden on the person. I have firsthand knowledge of this. I was a victim of this far as the vehicle being towed. But I was also present when they put two of our policy officers out of a home at night with children in the rain. Now, this that's the housing corruption. And as far as the water goes, that's self-explanatory with them cutting the water off. And not only cutting the water off, rerouting the water from a clean water system to a contaminated water system, pumping it through these people's homes. And food and water is a necessity of life. So it's so much corruption going on up there. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That's,
and
that's
I could
true.
Go on.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what, Brother Daniel? There's help at the, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel. And I see it. What inspires me so much about what you all are doing is that it lays the blueprint for every urban area, every suburban area where we're not getting justice, specifically in these metropolitan areas such as Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia, Atlanta. However, the sense was so important about Detroit, and what's so important about the state of Michigan is the population. You have a population of 80% black. Well, I think it went down to 78% one census that I looked at. The population is majority black, and you see when you do a complete study of Michigan. Looking at even a historical analysis of our time in Michigan, you see that there's always been some human rights violations. There's always been some crimes and some illegal population transfers. But what's also evident is the fact that you see colonialism up front and center. You see it actually playing out. And once we secure the population in Detroit, we'll be able to use that blueprint and replicate it all over the United States. And in terms of municipal self-governance. Now, I'm not saying that self-governance is going to look the way, because that's up to the people of Detroit to decide how you will come in on a local level, whether it be as a corporate entity, like you set up a parallel structure to the government of that's already in place and just get an office within inside of that office, or whether you set up like a tribal government or set up another corporate entity similar to the land bank or similar to how the Alaska Natives have theirs, is going to be totally up to you all as an internally sovereign entity of how you want the Detroit people's government to look. But I love what you all are doing, because you've created a political space that is going to it's going to open up a lot of doors for a status change our status as indigenous, because we have documented proof that we were already here. It's going to open up that conversation for consent. Consent alone has been sidestepped in Detroit when it came to the property, when it comes to the water in the state of Michigan. So you all have opened up so many cans of worms on a both a domestic and an international level. It's just unfounded of where the direction of where you all have taken us. I know you've taken me to the Inter-American Courts. You've taken me to The Hague. I've looked at this and studied it from all four corners, and you all have the moral upper ground, you have the legal upper ground, and you have the political upper ground, especially once we build that capacity and get more people on board within the state of Michigan, within the area of Detroit, Benton Harbor, and all these other areas where we are, and even including Flint, and all these areas, you know, where we're not getting justice. And I find it very interesting that we're not bringing more of our Black nationalist brothers and sisters on board. I don't know whether they're afraid. I don't know what the issue is. However, we're going to press on, and I know I'm going to press on in the way that I'm pressing on, which is helping with the legal aspect of it, making sure the documents and the administrative part is being followed down to the nail. That way, if anything does happen, we have a paper trail behind it. And with that, I'm going to yield the floor back to you, brother.
Yes, and on the topic of other influential, I guess you would say, leadership or folks with platforms, I don't understand it either, Sister Elena. Well, then again, yes, I do. It's as Comrade Ramsey says, they're controlled opposition. You know, they. I don't like speaking ill of anyone or of their intentions, but it seems like their intentions aren't to move forward. It's to just show their presence. See, we're putting boots on the ground. We're getting into the system. We're moving and we're doing things. And we have reached out to several different organizations. Matter of fact, we reached out to almost all the organizations. And they, you know, all that's within our reach, so to speak. And they've been reluctant to participate. They'll talk to us, but as far as participating and coming out to show support or even on their platforms to really get down to the nitty-gritty of the situation and call out, because the only things preventing us right now, the one basic thing is that's preventing this from going through is we need manpower, policy officers to stand, you know, in defense of what we're doing. Now, this doesn't mean we need guns and shooting and killing and this and that, no. But we need them there to show that this is the will of the people and you're not going to stop the people from doing what their will is. Now, this is political as well as humanitarian intervention. This is basically political. We got more votes, as you know, almost in two nights. And well, we started out at 18,000 one night, and then we went up to like 35,000, and it just crashed our system, and then it just kept climbing. So I would say in a matter of 3 days, we probably got over 100,000 new registries on our system. And that's when they came in and literally attacked, and that's when they had that shooting incident where they tried to break into the home where Comrade Ramsey was at. And but what that was all set up to take our equipment. They took all our electronic equipment that we were using to broadcast with. That's what that was basically all about. See, because they seen what had happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but as far as other entities and different groups, we're having a real tough time getting them to stand in. We even have one that I will remain, that shall remain nameless, made this statement of, You want us to come up there and risk our lives? Well, we're risking your lives. If you're not willing to risk your life, you're not living. And if you're not willing to go to jail, you're not free.
That's true.
That's the way I look at it. You got to be willing to give something to get something. And but we're not, I mean, we're risking our lives, of course. That's what we're doing. We know that the evils that men do. But it's more important to, the mission is more important than me. The mission
That's
is
true.
More important than I am, because it's not about me. I'm well over 50 years old now, and I've lived a pretty good life. But my grandchildren and your grandchildren and people I don't know, children and grandchildren, they don't need to come up like this. I'm not leaving this system the way it is in place now for them to inherit. No, we must do something.
True.
And that's why I'm involved, because I
that's
see
true.
It and I know we can change it. I know
that's right.
It can change.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And but you know what I'm finding too? Sometimes I believe it's fear, because we do have to admit we are in a hostile state. That's one of the issues, and I'm not making excuses, because I find it unacceptable too. We do have different groups that have the manpower, that has the resources, that can be of assistance. However, I'm going to look at it like this. The ground zero is inside of Detroit. The people of Detroit have to be empowered. And when I say empowered, Black people in Detroit has had so much taken from them since after World War II, before World War II, during the Great Migration. A large bit of the people ran from the South, all that wasn't kidnapped and brought there by those, brought by the natives, the so-called natives of that area. They played a role in slavery there. I did a little bit of research there, looking at the history. Then a large part of our people in Detroit were people who fled the South prior to being released from slavery. And they've experienced nothing but trauma, Brother Daniel, ever since. And, you know, you got a lot of people that are afraid, that's scared, that don't think that self-determination is even a possibility here in the United States, when we do have different colonized people who are self-governing. You have the Alaskan Natives. You have the Native Americans. We have documented proof our ancestors fought beside these people, the ones that didn't enslave us. You know, we have to be clear, you know, that we have a United States constitutional presence within the United States that entitles us to a parameter of determination, that entitles us to self-governance, to manage our own resources, to control our own resources, cultural property, all of those things. Detroit is filled with historical property that belong to Black people that they don't control. And when you don't control your spaces and your places, then you set yourself up for failure. And that's what has happened. And that is what these other groups don't understand. So I just think that since using this approach is so new, Brother Daniel, you know, I think a lot of people are afraid. And I think they have good reason to be, because we have COINTELPRO during the 1960s that evidenced what they will do. You have what happened, evidence what they'll do. World War One. We are in a racist apartheid state. Also, just recently, we have more than reason to be concerned. We have a young man who killed a person who killed two people point blank up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and he got off on self-defense. Clearly racially motivated, clearly racist, and he's off the hook. Now, we have another case here.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Brother Daniel.
And not only, let's just leave racism out for a minute. That was willful intent. He came across state lines to the city of Kenosha and killed those people. And he was assisted by an adult parent, which should have been she should have been charged also with an accessory. If he didn't charged with self-defense, she should have been charged with accessory to the crime itself, to the action. See, but that shows you, like you said, that's called white privilege. Now, like I said, I'm not a racist. This is just reality. That's white privilege right in your face.
Yes,
that's what that is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Too, Brother Daniel, if you look at that case and you look at some of the things that the judge did, it shows that there is a straight-out war on black people. Now, some people can interpret this case as this is an issue between two segments of white people, and we can get into that as well. If you really look at the, you know, look at the underpinnings of this whole issue of what brought that young man there. But at the same time, you focus on our problem, it shows that we will never get justice within this justice system because we have the judgments to show that. So we've exercised
this
all
system is their
remedies.
System. Yeah,
that's
it's
right.
Their system.
That's right.
Elena, you know, it was designed by them for them. When are the people going to understand that?
That's right. That's right. That's right. But you have people. What I'm getting at, Brother Daniel, is we're going to have to build capacity from within the people themselves. I'm talking about people in Detroit. We're going to have to come up with some kind of way to do a mass campaign to get them involved, to get the true leadership in these areas, not in just Detroit, but in Benton Harbor and all those Flint, Michigan, and all those other surrounding areas that has where we're the majority population. They have to be involved to see that, look, we don't have to keep voting for leadership. We can go another political route in exercising self-determination, self-governance, autonomy. That is the route that we're going to have to go if we're going to close these inequality gaps. Voting Republican has gotten us nothing. Voting Democrat, voting for the Green Party, doing all these things, it has gotten us nothing but further in genocidal conditions. We own nothing. We control nothing. We have set ourselves up to be slaughtered, and that's the way that I see it. And until we get the people to understand that, because I'm of this line of thinking right now. Yes, we can go to organizations and we can ask them to be a part, but it's going to be the people to benefit from this. It's going to be Shaquita down the street to benefit from this movement. She needs to know that she has a right to immediate reparations. The people of Detroit has a right to immediate remedy. That means immediate transfer of authority to whatever property belongs to black people up there. It needs to be under the control of black people. Corporations should not be able to come in at their whim and bypass black people's water rights, property rights, land rights, cultural rights. All these rights is being sidestepped and put in the hands of these other group of people to misappropriate and absorb and use it to build their areas out in the suburbs, but leave the black poor people in Detroit year after year in poverty, landless, penniless, homeless, sometimes jobless. I mean, when does it stop, Brother Daniel?
Right. Well, see, and that on that last statement, the jobless part, that's the part that I was kind of sort of making reference to that I didn't continue into it when I was speaking on how the folks, they'll buy them houses for $1,000 and then they give them a certain time limit to have them up to a certain standard when there's no real jobs and the money that they're making that they still have to live while trying to fix this, trying to make repairs on these other homes that they're trying to buy. See, so, you know, it's a system. It's a setup. You're set up to fail right from the beginning.
That's right. And what about the bank? Where are the banks? What about, you know, the federal government gives X amount of dollars USDA and HUD and all those federal programs, they give those municipalities millions of dollars every month for weatherizing homes. That means putting roofs on top of the homes, putting doors in the homes, putting heating in the homes. Where is this money? Okay? In every state, the federal government gives X amount of dollars for weatherizing property. Where's that money? Has anybody pulled a budget and do a thorough study, do an audit on that budget to find out where is the money, how it's been appropriated, and what part of that budget is black people getting in these areas? Has anyone done that?
Not to my knowledge. I know I haven't, but as far as that goes, we know that Dr. Ben Carson had sent, I believe it was $600 million to Detroit to help keep the people in their homes, to stop the mortgage foreclosures, and the mayor misappropriated. He used it for his pet projects. And then there was, I think it was $2 billion and another incident where they took the money that was the federal money and misappropriated the money again. And the mayor even had a nerve. Now, I don't know this. I didn't get this from, I wasn't there when these statements was made, when they had that rally. But according to the people and according to what I read, that the mayor told them point blank, he wasn't giving the money back. They didn't have the money to give back to the people, that when they overcharged them for them phony taxes and inflated property taxes and water bills and things like that. So the corruption runs so deep to the fact that when we were there on the 26th of August, September, I think it might have been September. No, it would have been August. I believe it was August. The FBI was, when we got there that morning to have more people to register and sign up to vote for their independence and to withdraw their consent, it was a lot of news media out there. We're trying to figure out, we just wonder why the news media was out there. Well, was the reason they were there because they were running up in city council members' offices and taking documents out of the offices, boxes and boxes of documents, because of a corrupt towing scandal scheme that they had going on that I got caught up in, where they're just towing people's cars and then giving you to run around making sure they hold it 3 or 4 days to get the maximum storage price out of you and mm-hmm. Things like that. And now they've just passed, the city council has passed a law or bill that they can't tow your vehicle if you're there. If you're there, they can't tow it. If you get there before it's towed. And also you can get some type of hardship discounts and things like that. But see, they shouldn't need that, to have to put that in place, because they shouldn't have been doing the corrupt towing in the first place. See, there's so,
that's right.
It's just so many things. Now, and by the way, my vehicle that was towed, it wasn't even my vehicle. That was an Avis rental car. And they told me that car would be held probably at least a week or more before it would be released. Now, I had rented that car, so that meant every day that vehicle was out, in the impound, Avis was going to charge me those days. See, so it's whether they getting the money, and now Avis was going to charge me, they were going to charge Avis for storage. So, see, that's even more corruption. But I put an end to it because I contacted Avis and tried to do everything that I could to get that car out that very day and the next day. When it got to the point where I couldn't get it, I just told Avis point blank, I've had the car one day, one 24-hour period. That's all I'm paying for. If you try to do anything other, I said, because you know where the vehicle is. You see it was towed because for no reason. Well, we know why it was towed. Sicilian, it was towed to bring harm to me because we had just did an interview with the media against the city. Mm-hmm. So that's how that's what that was about. And, I told them, I'm not paying. I don't care what you do. Even if I have to close my account where that money was coming from, where you was going to make your withdrawals from. But, it's just so much stuff going on up there, and the treatment of the people, you know, And I wanted to also say this, when we're speaking about why we need more policy officers. See, some folks believe that the reason those police officers backed off on the 14th was because of Comrade Ramsey quoting the international law, Detroit City Charter, Michigan State Constitution, and all of that. That's not what it was that made them back off. What made them back off is because we had all of them policy officers standing there ready to deal with whatever situation came down. That's why they backed off. We don't want the people to get confused. It wasn't the words that came out of his mouth that stopped him. It was the might that we had standing behind us that stopped
the people. It was the people.
The people.
It was the people.
The people.
The people.
Yes.
That's right. And that's one thing I say. We have international human rights. We got rights that will bring us out of this mess and close these inequality gaps within 5 to 10 years. Termination means you control your own resources. That means we get to plug those areas where we're bleeding, and we don't depend on our sworn enemies and oppressors to do it. So that's what makes human rights so beautiful. But it's up to us. It's up to the people to assert it. You can know all the law in the world and have all the rights in the world. But until we assert those rights as one unified group of people, as Afro-descendants, if you want to consider yourself as a foundational Afro-descendant, or whether you consider yourself and self-identify as an Aborigine, okay?
Yes.
We are going to have to get on one page and understand that
ma'am.
It is up to us to assert those rights. And I'm going to tell you something else, too, Brother Ramsey. I meant Brother Daniel. It's not fair that you all are the only ones asserting those rights at this time. It's very unfair. And when we have people that have the resources, have the capacity, but refuse to help build a legitimate political organ where we can realize immediate reparation. When you exercise your human right as a self-declared political entity, such as a tribal nation, as a people, as a tribal, or assert those human rights in some type of political configuration where you can utilize your rights and assert your rights on a collective basis. Something's wrong with that picture, brother Daniel.
Yes,
and you know
is.
I travel
yes,
in some circles. I travel in circles. So I raise my eyebrow at a lot of these people. But one thing, what my contribution is going to be and what I am working on is a property right, land claim right document that is going to be filed on it within the international court system for the people of Detroit and for the people of the United States, black people in the United States, period. But it's
yes.
going to be based on Detroit, because you all are actually doing it. You all are on the ground. You're boots on the ground, and you have the model to do what it is that we propose to do.
Yes, ma'am. And we're not one to back down. I'm never, and I know Kamala Ramsey, we're never going to back down. This is going to go forward. We're winning. We got some new things that's getting ready to be implemented. And as we speak, we're still working on things, but our problem is finance and lack of participation from other groups that has the platforms that can get this word out. If we could just get one or two mainstream media outlets to talk about what we're doing in a positive light, you know, not calling us scam artists and snake oil salesmen, things like that, which we know we can bring them up on charges for defamation of character, but not in the city of Detroit, because ain't no attorney going to take the case. The judges, we've already filed It's 117 lawsuit. It was a class action lawsuit, 117. We've never heard nothing else about it. But the The state building knows about it because when I was there trying to get that for the Freedom of Information back there, October the 21st or October the 17th, when I was there, let me see. Yeah, I believe it was the 17th or 8th or 20th, one of the 2 days I was there twice. They told me, they said, we see why they don't like you guys. Says y'all got a lawsuit out against them. I said, yeah. I said, what's the process or what's, you know, where's it standing now? She said, well, it's just shows that it's a lawsuit there, but they haven't moved on it yet. It's just sitting dormant. See, and that's the city council. That's the judges up there, Judge Kenny. We know he's the one. He's the senior judge in Detroit. We know that's why that case has not gone any further. But see, it's hard. They say you can't beat the system, but we're not trying to beat the system. We're trying to create our own. See, that's the difference. We're not trying to beat them. We're creating our own.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And you know what? Within the United States, there's a way to do that. And there's also a way to do it within the international system. The bottom line is we have collective international rights that must be asserted. This current paradigm that we're in, integration, it was a failure. Civil rights was a failure. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but it was a failure. It was a failure then. It's a failure now. And we have to progress and advance to human rights, to securing land and property rights and water rights and have these people before they put these corporations and they make these decisions that affect our population, they have to come to the table and consult with us first and do an impact study and show how it's going to impact our people. And if we don't want it in our areas, we don't have to have it. And basically, I'm not going to put too much out here. The bottom line is we are in apartheid condition, and apartheid is being practiced against us. As long as we're not able and we don't have a way to reconfigure this political construct and this parasitical relationship, the United States is practicing apartheid.
Yes,
and
yes,
that's
they
the
are.
Whole basis of the reparations. It's not about what they did in slavery. It's about what they're doing right now. Right now, the United States is violating international law. Why? Because
exactly.
We don't have a way to adjudicate our grievance against them. We don't have a way to change our political configuration. Why? Because
not using their system.
No, that's right. And the reason why? Because they have us penciled in as a what? Simple minority. They don't even recognize the value of our identity as being indigenous people. They even have us at the wrong status, like we're immigrants, like we swam across the Mayfly to get here. When we know that's not true.
We know we've been here. We've always been here. We've been everywhere, always. And that's one of the greatest fears. And I'm going to say this, but I'm not going to speak too much on it. People keep talking about the Illuminati and this and that and these organizations. Do you know what the one thing that big secret that they seem to be holding is? The fact that we are God's chosen people, and they do everything to make sure that's never exposed. That's why they control the churches. That's why churches are always 501c3. Not that I have anything against churches. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. But the government will never let any group or organization benefit without doing something for that government.
That's
if
true.
They're not going
to,
if they're letting you a 501c3, then you're going to have to do something for them. And what they're doing is keeping the fact they're not preaching and teaching the truth. They're just. I don't even want to get into that part of it because I've did a lot of research on that I've come to recently find out that the biggest secret they have and the one thing that they don't want our people to know is that we are truly God's chosen people. That's the big secret.
That is true, Brother Daniel. That is true. And the sad part about it is We don't even know how powerful we are once we come together. The biggest thing that we have to do is unify. Unity speaks volumes. I get into conversations with people all the time, and, well, you know, we got to worry about this internal violence and the black-on-black violence when it's time to really make a move and do something. Black people, we got to open our own business. Those businesses are not going to do you any good because you won't control the sales tax based on it. You don't even have the capital to open a business. The average person don't have the capital to open a business. Okay?
And the banks aren't providing that capital.
That's right. That's right. That's so true. So my thing is we have to organize legally and politically into a political configuration. That should come first. And one thing I'm making sure that I do, I'm not supporting any type of organization that's not moving forward to nation building and asserting human rights. I'm not giving donations to people. I don't do that. If I don't see them actively moving towards human rights and giving a lot of lip service but not moving there, I'm not supporting them. I'm not doing anything.
No. When they speak on black-on-black crime, it's not black-on-black crime. It's white-on-black crime because those folks are government-on-black crime. I don't like to sound racist, but on government black-on-black crime because they created a condition that we're in that creates the condition that causes the crime. They created of this with their poverty, the deindustrialization program. So when I hear people say black-on-black, I tell them, look, you got it wrong. Get it right.
That's right.
That's government or white on black. That's white created on black crime. That's what
that's
it is.
True.
And they need
that's
to know
true.
That and understand that.
That's true. And it's fratricide, too, because it's just like Amos Wilson, one of our ancestors, said. He said, if you take 50 rats and throw them in a box with enough cheese for only five, you're going to get some rat-on-rat crime. It's going to be a killing because people are going to do what they got to do for each. You know what I'm saying? So if you could get rat-on-rat crime like that, guess who's in the box? Okay? Now, another thing we got to look at, people are talking about, there was this young rapper, Young Dolph, that got murdered. And we keep seeing... Yeah. These young people are killing themselves. They're killing themselves because we haven't given them anything to live for. Okay? What have we given them to live for? We didn't have anything to live for. We was handed a vote. We trying to hand these children a nation. And they deserve
That's
a nation.
Right.
But we were handed a vote. Voting, you can't eat no vote. A vote don't make a turd. So, it's time for us to advance as a people. If we want to get rid of this fratricide, we got to put ourselves in a position of authority over ourselves and use remedies for ourselves. I was looking I was actually reading something on reparations, and I was looking at some of the things that Rwanda did to repair themselves. Well, there was a lot of mental issues because of the genocide over there. The internal conflict, the missing people, the rapes and things of that nature have been done to that people. They noticed that their issues were not getting any better as long as they used Western mythology and Western psychology. They kicked all those Western psychologists out of Rwanda and went back to their indigenous practices. And that is what got them where they are right now. Right now, they're healing as a nation, and that's what we're going to have to do, come up with our own mores and foreways of how we're going to get through this thing and start having internal conversation, okay? Because
yes, ma'am.
If we actually want to stop these murders with our young people, we're going to have to give them something to look forward to politically, not a vote, They need land. We need reparations. We need to be putting things in place for the generations to come. They need a nation
yes.
state, a government that answers to their needs and to them first. And if we have anything surplus, we don't mind sharing it with nobody else. But we need to come first, even with these so-called, you know, African family that we have and different other, you know, immigrants and everybody that I talk to. Well, why you want to just focus on African descendants in the United States? Because this is where we feel the harm. This is where the harm is done to us. It was done to our ancestors who were here. So we got to come up with our own way of dealing and addressing the issues. Our theater don't look like Zimbabwe. Our theater don't look like Australia. Our theater don't look like Vietnam. We're coming up against one of the most hostile, racist, rogue, apartheid regimes in the world. And
yes,
it could
we
be
are.
A death sentence. It could be a death sentence for either one of us for even proposing what we do. But it has to be done if we're going to survive, if the next generation is going to survive. Question.
Yes, ma'am.
Are what we're doing right now putting us in a position where we could be self-sufficient? That should be the question of any organization, anyone proposing a tribal nation. What are we doing to put ourselves in a position of surviving? That means being self-sufficient, where we run no matter who's in that White House. And the answer is we're not doing that. Detroit is the only one that's doing that right now.
Right. And see, when you vote in this system, you're saying you like the way you're being treated, basically.
That's right.
You're saying, okay, everything's okay. I like what they're doing to me. I like the fact that they're putting our innocent folks, innocent folks to death in these execution chambers, even if they know they're innocent. I like the fact that the police can run down on you anytime they want and just drag you out the car and do whatever they want to you, even though you're supposed to have human rights, civil rights, constitutional rights. They don't care about that. They have no concept of what rights are. The only thing they know is what they want to do. You know, we have to get them back, bring them back to reality. They don't understand. And it's so simple. It's a simple adjustment to change, you know, the situation. It's very simple, you know, and it's all it takes is, as we know, to become a nation, all you need, the three basic components that you need is a consenting population,
mm-hmm.
a territorial land,
mm-hmm.
and a temporary council or government body. That's it.
That's
all it takes.
That's it.
And that's it. And see, and that is so simple, but it's like Chinese, I don't even want to say Chinese, like speaking gibberish to them, like they don't understand.
I'm going to tell you something there, Brother Daniel. A lot of people don't want to go into nationhood because that means it's accountability. You have a lot of these organizations that set up under 501c3s. And the ones that are
yes.
not set up under 501c3s, they're in control of that money, and there's no accountability. So they don't have a vested interest into going into nationhood. When you have a nation
right.
state, you have transparency, and you have accountability, okay? You're accountable to the people that you propose, that you lead, and you propose to protect. But when you have these Negroes and these factions and different factions and whatever have we, you know, in these old 501c3s and, you know, these so-called people that set up these organizations, they can take that money and run off with the bag. There's no accountability. And when you're when you're in these different organizations, you know, that set up, there's no accountability in their governance. They're not accountable to you. You know what I'm saying? They can take that money
right.
and run off with the bag. A government, that's putting on our big boy shoes, putting on our big
right.
boy clothes. You know, that's what we need. We also need a apparatus that can secure, protect, and defend this population. We need our own military. We need that too. But I'm gonna tell you something. I don't want nobody standing beside me with a gun that's proposing, that's happy with integration. I'm sorry, I don't need you to protect me or my household. I need you to move on because you're an enemy.
Right.
You're
right.
My sworn
right.
enemy. If you're not talking about self-determination and controlling our own narrative, controlling an autonomy and a legal and an economic partition, you're not my friend. I'm sorry. You will not stand beside me with no goddamn gun. You know,
I understand you, sister. Right, I agree.
You know, that's the way I feel
agree.
About it. And then I hear a lot of these people talking about, oh, we putting boots on the ground and we feeding the people. You're going to some warehouse getting outdated food that Kroger don't want and all these other areas don't want from these food warehouses, and you giving it. You ain't grow nothing on your own damn land. You're going to some damn warehouse giving away somebody else's shit. 2 or 3 day old calling that shit some boots on the ground. There ain't no damn boots on the ground.
No.
Until
no.
we have the means of producing and control the means of producing what we need, you are only selling a pipe dream too. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We need a nation. We need our own militia, our own security apparatus to protect us. We need a nation. But the first thing we need is people understanding human rights.
Right. Now, and we have our own military. You've seen it. You've seen all the Huey P. Newton gun clubs and Fred Hampton gun clubs, the NFAC, these militias and stuff. We have the capability. We just got to get them to realize that this is what I know we need. It needs to be more expansive than that as far as equipment-wise. But that is a start right there, if to just stand in solidarity. There was even conflict with that, you know. I don't understand. They will let one person say one word and destroy the morale of thousands. One person will get in there and destroy the morale of thousands. But they can't,
well,
they can't destroy me.
That's right. That's right. And it just shows the trauma. We've been traumatized as a people. You know, I see it every day. It just shows the trauma of what we've been going through for the past 500 years. You know, we can't get along. We can't get on one page. You got this crab in the doggone bucket mentality. I don't want to see you get here first. Well, the bottom line is we're not going to get together, get nowhere if we don't unify. We got to get on the
right.
same political page. We got to quit using, we got black-on-black crime. Oh, people will do so much better, you know, if they get their money and they start spending their money. The average person, and I hate to say it, even if they're poor or homeless, they're getting some food stamps or something. They're getting some type of resources running through their fingers. The issue is they can't find anything affordable. It's not because they don't have it. It's just that they don't have anything affordable to get. So that's a political problem. That's a legal problem.
Well, you know that to rent a property in Detroit now, you must make 3 times the amount of your rental costs.
And
for
that's
months.
Unacceptable. That's unacceptable. That's unacceptable.
Well, if you only have to pay rent once a month, why do you need 3 times the amount before you can move in?
Thank you. That's
yes.
That's a legal
and
political issue.
Yeah. And see, that's what we need to, and what we've been discussing some things that we're going to do about that. See, we're going to start taking it right to the face of these people, the media. We're going to take it to the face of the mayor. You know, since you want to sit and hide behind the walls and don't want to come out when you're called out to, you know, have a discussion, then I guess we're going to have to go behind the walls, you know, because you're not going to keep standing back, sending your soldiers out and your flunkies and cronies out to do things to people, because also those police are now being put on notice that you're violating international law, you're violating human rights, you are participating in a humanitarian crisis. They're letting them know that, and you can be brought up on crimes against humanity. Oh, we're getting ready to let them know. They're getting ready to, well, and I'm going to be honest with you. For the most part, the Detroit City Police, as I said about the Highland Park City Police, they usually bring the white boys out when they're ready to do something to us, as we call them, the race soldiers. They'll bring them out. Most of the black officers, they're reluctant to do anything unless their hands forced. And we know that. We understand that. But they're still a participant. They're still a willing participant in what's going on. So we plan to put all of this to an end when the next time they see us, and that injunction that they have out, that is a blanket injunction. You don't know names. You just say everyone involved. No, you need to call me by my name. You know my name. Put my name on it. You know my name. Don't act like you don't know. I stood right there at your courthouse and told you my name. So I'm sure somebody got it on record. But
well, the bottom line is when they know they're doing wrong, Brother Daniel, they're going to do everything to cover it up and try to make sure it's right when they're doing everything wrong.
Right. Well,
you got to put up a clean fight.
Well, the incident with one of our policy officers that allegedly hit that officer across the head with a tripod stand. From what I understand, there were no charges filed. Now, how can you not? But they want to charge you with resisting arrest and assault on an officer just for talking to him. You know what I mean? Not wanting to get out the car or something or whatever. You know, they want to put resisting arrest on you. And here, this person allegedly whacked him straight across his head and was no charge.
Mm-hmm.
And why was it there no charge? The reason it was no charge is because they don't want the paper trail. That's why. They don't want the paper trail.
They don't want that paper trail.
Because if you have a paper, right, because that would have been connecting her to Ramsville, and Ramsville wasn't charged either. So, therefore, that would have been something, documentation, that could have been utilized against him. Like, what were you doing there? Why did you do that to him? What did he do wrong? He only was quoting the laws, quoting your own words. See, so they know that they couldn't do nothing. They know they have to be careful in what they do. So, therefore...
Oh, yeah. And
yeah,
not
they didn't
only
put no
that,
paper out.
And not only that, you're not doing anything that's unlawful. You're responding to a violation of your human rights to exist. The people in Detroit's right to life is being violated just by the conditions that they live in. And this isn't just for this generation, it's intergenerational. During those riots, the United States have put things in place that has not been secured yet for those black people up there. Okay?
Exactly.
What has changed since, when you go back and look at what caused those riots, what happened back in the 60s, and what those remedies were, nothing has been put in place. Nothing has changed. You just got a lot of people that's taking a crap and covering it up. But the corruption is still there, okay?
Right.
The abuses are still there. So one of the key things that has to be done is the people that's up there need to be educated. When, you know, nobody should be talking about voting at this point. It should be people should be talking about withdrawing their consent from that parasitical relationship and asserting those human rights. Now,
yes,
a land claim and a land and a property claim has to be filed. It needs to be filed immediately. And I'm going to continue doing the research for that on my end. But you all are doing some great work up there, and you're laying and paving the way of what could be and what will be once we unify as a people.
Yes. It's going to happen, Sister Elena. That's without a doubt, because we're not backing down. We're pushing forward. Like I said, there's some other things getting ready to happen. So they're gonna be in the media again, bad mouthing us, but this time it's not going to work. Whatever they say is not going to work, because we already have the people behind us, and the people have already withdrawn their consent. And see, and we're just the organizers. That's all. It's up to the people, as you know. It's up to the people. We're just the organizers.
That's right.
And we're willing to stand out in front and do what needs to be done. But we got some things that's going to go down. We're not moving. We're not backing up.
And I just want to go over the applicable legal instrument that applies to the situation in Detroit. The first one is the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, Articles 1, the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, the Declaration on the Granting of Independence to Colonial Countries and Peoples of 1960, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination Against Women, the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhumane, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, the Convention on the Rights of a Child, the Convention on the Suppression and Punishment of Apartheid, the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, the ILO 169, Articles 1, the UN Declaration of Indigenous Peoples, rights, the Inter-American Convention on Human Rights, and the Inter-American Convention on the Rights and Duty of Man. All these are things that are being violated right now as we speak, you know. So
yes, ma'am.
When you have the moral upper hand, the legal upper hand, it's coming. It's coming, Brother Daniel. It may not be when we want it, but it is coming. You know, it's got to be the people to get involved and understand that they have these rights. And like I said, once Detroit comes through and falls through, all of the rest of the metropolitan areas, they'll be coming, you know, they'll be next.
Yes. Yes,
Brother Daniel, I certainly do appreciate you in all you do. And I appreciate you coming in today, and we just, you know, give some information about what's going on in Detroit. I had several people, you know, just wanting updates on what's going on. Would you like to plug your information in for people in Detroit who may be listening or people who may wish to come to Detroit to help you all? Would you plug your information?
Yes. Our website is DetroitGov.us. That's DetroitGov.us. And that's the people's government. And anyone that would like to donate to help us replace some of our equipment that we use to broadcast with, because it's very expensive, we have a Cash App and website, Cash App on the website, but for those who may not be able to locate on the website, it's $SelfDetermination. Self begins with a capital letter, determination is a capital letter, all one word. $SelfDetermination is our Cash App. If you would like to donate to help us, you know, we usually don't ask for donations. We never ask. We try to do it out of our own pockets. But they kind of set us back when they stole all our equipment. Yes, the police literally stole our equipment. That's what they did to stop us from broadcasting. But and also, anyone who would like to become a human rights policy officer to help secure this, on their website, when you go to DetroitGov.us and the government page opens up, there'll be a square up in the right-hand corner. Three red bars. Press that and hit human rights policy officer and register. or just register if you want to come to Detroit to move back to Detroit, because there's a lot of folks that moved away because of the situation. We need you to come on back. Detroit is going to be a glowing city when we're done with this. This thing is going to it's going to be one of the greatest things, and it is one of the greatest movement we as a people have attempted in the last 500 years. So self-determination exactly. is the only way to go. Thank you.
Exactly. And let's take a look at Detroit. The location is a great location. We have rights to the sea. We got rights that we can assert on that water that allow us to trade. As a free association, insular nation, because, you know, the people's government of Detroit even bigger organ. So
yes.
Once we assert those rights, you know, that's going to establish an internal economy for us. You know, we have the Native Americans we can do business with. We have, Latin American countries that are cool with the United States we can do business with. We have new sustainable development projects we could work on, agribusiness that we could work on, construction businesses. Once we're in a political configuration such as, you know, like the peoples of Detroit has asserted their international rights, just imagine the contracts that could be secured. Just domestically.
Yes.
We're not talking about internationally, you know. So we'll
right.
put ourselves in a position to close these wealth gaps within 5 years. Okay, within
yes.
5 to 10 years, we can see a difference if we just change the political status and the political configuration. That's all we're doing. They're trying to do. We're not trying to take down the United States. We'd be a fool to try to go up against a superpower like that. We just want our piece of the pie, you know.
That's it.
And now
that's it.
We
right
know
there.
That we have rights that will allow us to get our piece of the pie if they're asserted correctly. You know, democracy is not a bad thing, you know. It's not a bad thing. We can practice
if it's spread fairly,
if it's spread fairly
across all peoples, democracy is
right.
a great thing.
That's right. And the problem that we've had is that we have not been practicing democracy. We have been practicing oligarchy. So, you know, that's why we have the right to change our relationship with the government, and we can do it and not be hostile. So I'm going
right.
to continue to work on the legal and the political part of it and the strategic part of it and the administrative part of what we need to be doing and continue to articulate it to the people that it needs to be articulated to, foundation that we need, the legal foundation that we need to get us where we need to go. And with that being said,
yes,
Brother
ma'am.
Daniel, is there any closing remarks or anything else you would like to share before we end the call?
Basically, just that we want people to stay vigilant and let people know what's going on. Share this information. Share the website, DetroitGov.us. Register as policy officers. Talk if you know any folks that has influence and power or platform that can talk about what we're doing here in Detroit. Please inform them on what's going on. And on our website also, there's flyers that can be downloaded and printed off, you know, that's right on the website. So everything is basically, we have to use the greatest source of information spreading known to man. That's word of mouth, you know, because we didn't always have this technology. So it was word of mouth. So that's still one of the greatest wonders. But we need you to talk to the people and think about your children. You know, think about their children. You know, you see your neighbors have children, young children. You don't want them to have to come up through what we went through, even though some of us may have what we think or thought or felt as though was, I had a good life. We had everything we wanted, this and that growing up. Yeah, but it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the other people, what they've been through, what they're going through. That's what we have to realize. and remember. And that's why I do what I do. Thank you.
Ashe. Well, Brother Daniel, yes. Thank you so much. You know you're always welcome on this show. Hopefully next week we'll have some more guests or have guests. But I just wanted to touch bases with you all and get the word out of what we're about and what we're trying to do, and let you frame your own narrative. Sometimes, you know, the media, it tries to put a negative light on what you're trying to do, but they can't. You got the moral upper hand. You got the legal upper hand. You got everything right in the lap of where you need to be to make this thing work. All we need is the people. We need an educated population so they'll know how to move. And with that being said,
that's right.
I'm going to close out this show and bid everyone farewell and good night. And you have a wonderful rest of your night, Brother Daniel.
All right. Good night, Sister Lana. Good night, everyone.
There's a fine line, baby, I'm on it.
There's a fine line between love and hate. You see, can't wait too late, but baby, I'm on it. There's a fine line between love and hate. You see, can't wait too late, but baby, I'm on it. Can't worry about what a nigga think to see. That liberation, and baby, I want it. Can't worry about what another nigga think. Now that's liberation, and baby, I want it.
Left over to me, and my mama them told me.